John.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, so you get... So, yeah, we had some pretty good flooding, too, but it appears you really got inundated there, huh?
Yeah, they got a little wet around the library, and I guess they might have sent me... There was a email, I guess, that went out yesterday to library and staff, or probably all university, telling them where to park and how to deal with it.
Oh, I see.
And as a retiree, nobody got that to me, so...
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. I'm apologetic. I had stuff all packed up, and all of a sudden I'm going, this road's blocked. I can't get through.
Yeah.
They're going to send me a note, but it's just going to say we really can't do it until, like, the first week of April again.
Okay.
And if you and I actually can pick a date while we're chatting, that would be great. If we can't, we'll slow it up. But I guess the boss is having some medical procedure, and he therefore has got his other employees doing other things. And can you hear me okay?
Sure. Well, why don't we get that out of the way first thing, and then we can talk about whatever we have to talk about.
Well, first thing is, I'm actually recording this so I don't have to take as many notes.
Okay.
And so if you tell me anything you don't want recorded, just tell me so I'll put it on pause so I don't have to remember what not to remember.
Well, there won't be anything that I...
Right. Nope. But so I have it on speakerphone. So that it
surely.
So that I didn't know if the quality would be poor. Sometimes it is.
I can still hear you, so that's important. And if you can hear me, we're
yeah,
we're okay.
Your cold doesn't come through as clearly now as it did on my cell when I was in the car parked illegally waiting to try to get through to you or the librarian person. So
I think I took a couple sips of water since then. So, but anyway,
so the first week of
most of April looks you know pretty open, and it's of course the first week of April is, I mean, Easter Sunday is April 1st, and so we govern ourselves accordingly with that. But other than that, I don't have anything.
So between
that I see right now on the schedule.
Between the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, do those all work?
Yeah, probably the 4th or 5th might be a little better,
okay.
Just because I usually go into the labor office on Tuesday.
Okay.
So the 4th or 5th would be better, yeah.
Okay. I see on my calendar that weekend is labor notes. Have you ever gone to that?
No, but we have probably it's a good week to avoid because we have our annual conference on the 7th, the same date as labor notes, and we're pissed because we had chosen this and then we found out about labor notes. A lot of our participants are going to labor notes and because it's so close, you know.
Is that a bad week then to talk to you, though, because of your conference?
Yeah, just because I got a lot of stuff. I think most of it's wrapped up, I shouldn't be too busy, but yeah, that would work all right, although the following Wednesday and Thursday would be good, too.
So, any other days the following week also work? 10,
sure.
11, or 12? I mean, 11 or 12, or?
Yeah, sure, 11 or 12, in fact. As I say, the whole week of April is okay. I'd avoid, and we can do it the 4th or 5th if that's available. We may as well do it and get it going. You know, it's not
okay.
Going to take that much time.
So I will let them know 4, 5, 11, or 12.
Sure.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Do you still have a copy of my release forms?
Yeah, I think I do. I ran across them. I'm pretty cleaning out my office as we speak almost.
So am I.
Well, I mean, I actually hired a woman to help me.
Oh, great.
And she's a real taskmaster, you know.
Good.
Damn her. But we've done a good job, and I've talked with the steelworkers, and he's eager for my AIW stuff. And so I'm in the middle of getting that put together, and my idea is to ship it off to him because, John, I've got to move out of this house.
By when?
That's up in the air.
Okay.
I'm going to plan to stay through the summer at least.
Okay.
But I've got to get into a single family, a single story place. And this house is huge, and we raised all the kids here. And
how many kids did you have? I forget, Ken.
Five.
Five? Wow.
Plus we raised two of our grandchildren because of problems, and so we always had a house full. Now we have a house empty, and it's just too much house for me. I mean, I can still do the stairs and all, but but I've got to worry about snow shoveling and lawn maintenance. We have a fairly good sized yard. And it's there's just too much that I have to take care of.
Well, are you going to stay in Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to try to stay within the city limits even. I kind of like the diversity of the city
Well, I still hope my daughter Catherine and her boyfriend Jason come to see you some point. Their life got a little more crazy because Katie lost her job and now is out doing new job hunting.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, she worked for a thing called Flash Talking, which was a British firm out of Leeds, England, that was kind of smaller but significant competitor to Google in terms of placing these online ads.
Oh, I see, yeah.
One of their accounts was Washington Post, but all papers do it. So, I mean, they had some things. Anyways, they're having some financial issues, and so she had been in New York for 3 years, and I think Chicago a year before New York, and then this last year, and then somewhat remote in Milwaukee, but went into Chicago for one overnight, 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, she and her boyfriend Jason are into skiing.
Oh.
And so they drive up to the Keweenaw, Michigan.
Sure.
Which is great fun to me. I don't know if I ever told you. That's where my father and the Rivettes are from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so when I was a kid.
Did you work in the mines?
Yeah, my dad's dad, my grandfather paternal, worked for Calumet and Hecla.
Okay.
And that's, I don't know if you ever went to my website and looked at media and looked at my From Calumet to Kalamazoo video, which was the first one I was.
I did, years ago, I think I saw that. That's been there up a while, hasn't it?
But it's on my website under media, so anybody can look it up. But I did it originally with a colleague, Carol, and at the same time as Elsa and I and Babson and Alpern got going with Detroit Labor History Tours, and all of this relates to what I want to talk, part of one of the things I want to talk to you about, which isn't interviewing you, if you have enough time, but if you're not feeling well, I can postpone.
Well, no, I'm okay for now.
Okay, just let me know, because my wife says sometimes I just get too carried away. Anyways, my dad was from Calumet. My father-in-law was from Kalamazoo.
Oh, okay.
And Diane and I were married in 1970.
She
put up with me for a long time. and her dad was supportive, and he was the assistant superintendent of schools in Jackson, Michigan at the time that video was done. It was done as a, it was a synchronized slide tape, if you know what those were.
Oh, yeah, we did a few of those things.
Right. So part of the genesis for Detroit Labor History Tours and the Michigan Labor History Society was Bill Adelman going to the Corn Blues house. Do you remember Hire Joyce?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So I worked for them for 1 year before I started for MSU, and Elsula had just come to work and had been the AFT's editor, and then he became the UAW's editor.
That's exactly right.
And so people like Oscar Pascal came from Detroit, who was working on the UAW education staff, and to the Corn Blues, and that kind of helped get the Michigan Labor History Society going, because we had Bill Adelman come to Corn Blues to talk to these lefties, professors, and union leaders, mostly UAW.
Sure.
And so anyways, the idea of the tour, the slideshow, the society all kind of got started off in January or February of 1977.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that Elsula and I are going to proposed to the North American Labor History Conference for this fall is maybe to do something related to those.
Okay.
And I wondered if there's any chance I can get you to come back to that conference in the fall to maybe talk about the Wisconsin Labor History Society.
Well, it all depends upon how I'm doing, you know.
Well, just think about it. If you don't exit off, I spent time with Elsula last week. He has to move out of his large Detroit or Grosse Pointe Park home to a smaller place.
Sure.
Because he's had some health issues, but also their three kids have long since gone.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so David and Katie are downsizing. So I went and helped sort of librarian his books, took a few, sent couple boxes to Alpern and sorted them out for David to sell some and keep some.
Yeah.
And we chatted about doing something at the October 18 to 20 Labor History Conference, the one you spoke on the Right to Work.
Yeah, all right.
And David would be, David was very excited about the thought of maybe a session on Midwest Labor History Societies with you and he, and maybe somebody from Illinois Labor History Society.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure the current president, whose name escapes me, but I know pretty well, you know, might be interested. And they actually have an executive director. They have more cash than we do.
Sure.
But we're still very successful. We're not losing any members as the unions go down, you know. And so that is attractive, and if I couldn't do it, I might be able to draft the current president.
I think that would be a great backup. And Elsula said, you know, maybe he'd try to get, do you know Mike Kerwin?
No.
He's a retiree who went back. He was working for the UAW like Oscar Pascal back in the education area in the 70s. And Mike is still involved with David and the Michigan Labor History Society. And David mentioned somebody for Illinois he knows, so I don't know. But
yeah, no. So I'd be glad to help out in that area, because we actually had a meeting, I don't know if I told you, we had our conference in 2015, I believe, was in Kenosha. And, of course, that's just over the line from Illinois. And we had a joint meeting, and we talked about greater cooperation. And the guy who was the president of it was very eager to do something, you know, Midwest-wise, because you know, outside of our two institutions and maybe the Pacific Northwest and the ones in New York and I think Pennsylvania, there's not much to say about labor history societies around the country. And although they have recently formed one in Iowa, and which has a surprisingly strong, you know, union history.
There. Right.
But so there is interest around the Middle West for this.
So jot down somewhere. I'll send you stuff, but if you haven't seen it, October 18, 1920.
Sure.
The same thing you did with me 2 years ago.
Yep.
I don't know if your buddy is going to...
I came over with Steve Meyer.
Right, and so I understand Steve just had a new book come out?
Well, his book came out about 2016.
Okay, I thought maybe he had an article. Something else came out.
In the auto industry or something.
Anyways, he goes...
It's a very good book. I did review it, yeah.
Oh, who'd you review it for? Oh,
For our own newsletter, yeah.
That's right, I saw it. Anyways, when you see him next, ask him if he's thinking of going in October and you might be interested in coming with him.
Well, yeah, in fact, he and I are still in contact. He had to resign from our board because of health issues.
Is he okay?
So, he's had to use oxygen all the time, So I'm not sure what kind of shape he'll be in.
Well, if that doesn't work, I'll figure out another way to get you here.
And I I'm a little freer to travel than I was while my wife was around.
Right.
But it's a long drive.
So my daughter, Catherine, and her boyfriend, Jason.
Yeah.
So when we're in Pentwater, they've driven around, but last summer, one of our Pentwater weeks, they took the ferry from Milwaukee to Muskegon, and we picked them up.
Well, that's what Steve and Margo and I did when we came over in 2015 or whenever.
But you took a car. What I'm saying is I could actually come. If Steve wasn't coming, I could just pick you up in Muskegon and drive together to Detroit and back.
Sure. We can make those plans if they accept our proposal.
Right.
You know.
But if I can press a little farther, I want to get even more wild.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but just tell me to stop if you've had enough.
Well, I mean, part of the problem, John, for myself, is overextending. I'm still running the Labor History Society, and I'm 88 goddamn years old, and by October I'll be 89, you know. And while I'm unbelievably active, who knows, you know, that's...
Ken, I understand that, and my health issues are modest, but, you know, even at 67, I have my set of things, and so I'm very appreciative of that. Let me just be a little more wild, just so I can, you know, let you think about this. I want to hear what you've talked to steelworkers about in terms of AIW stuff. Would you also be interested, if they're willing, that we do something on AIW at that same conference?
Well, yeah, I mean,
Okay.
I think we did propose something once for that conference, but they didn't show much interest.
When I proposed it, I suggested several other things, and understandably, the coordinator jumped at, you're willing to have a presentation on Michigan and Wisconsin going right to work? That's important. So that's what happened.
Oh, I see. Okay. So there wasn't necessarily, they didn't turn the idea down particularly.
Absolutely. That's correct. It was just, it was a hot topic in Michigan. Nobody could believe that Michigan and then Wisconsin were now right to work states.
Well, right. And
Did you move away from your phone?
Huh?
You're not as clear as you were a minute ago. Is your phone different?
No, I was just
That's better.
That speakerphone.
That's
for,
better.
For a bit, but that was all.
Sorry.
Yeah, you can hear me now, right?
Yes, much better. Anyways, just to think about it, here's so for health reasons and other issues, I've come and gone on several issues of trying to get something done. I would really still like to do with you an article that we could get published on some part of the AIW story. I really think, I think there are several journals. I assume you might also be a member of LACHA?
Yes, I am.
Right. So, ever since it started, I've been getting their labor studies and working class history. I actually have a subscription to the original labor history going back to grad school in 1975.
Yeah, we used to get that on a regular
right.
basis. Too.
There's also, yeah. I was for a dozen years, maybe 10 years, on something called the Michigan Historical Review's editorial board. And I was for another 10 years on the Historical Society of Michigan's board, and they have a Michigan history one. I am sure one of those framed some way. Some would be more Michigan, others would be more Midwest. But the Michigan Historical Review has done some nice things on Milwaukee because they see it as part of a Great Lakes thing. I'm sure we could get an article published, and I'd like at least to have us do that.
Well, I mean, there's a number of aspects of the AIW story which are really kind of interesting and I think meaningful. One of them goes way back to the original split, within the CIO and the AFL. And that whole story and the story being told, I mean, most everybody accepts that the good guys was the CIO and the bad guys
right.
was the AFL bunch. And to a large extent, that I think is probably more true than not. But on the other hand, there is another side of the story, which I think is interesting in that whole conflict early on, which is reflected in a number of histories, is really interesting. But the other part of it, the other story that I think is truly fascinating, is how the corruption permeated a certain area of the union, while the rest of it remained really quite pure.
Right.
And I think that whole corruption story
mm-hmm.
can be examined, and how we cleaned house,
mm-hmm.
and we're really, as far as I'm concerned, we are so goddamn democratic and Simon Pure, we couldn't do a goddamn thing,
Yeah. No, exactly.
There were times I used to say, goddamn union democracy. No.
Right.
But I wouldn't change it for the world, of course.
There's those. I mean, I really think if I pulled together for chanting the stuff you and I supplemented a little on the AIW stuff we've already written, and I think I still have from Walt and a few other people these convention proceedings of UAW-AFL, the AFL-CIO constitutional conventions, the IUD proceedings, the Michigan AFL convention proceedings for a number of years. There's just a lot of interesting things there.
Mm-hmm.
And then in more recent times, I read the Three Strikes Franklin book on Staley, and then the Staley book that Ashbury and Hawking did.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I did, we taped a bunch of people at the Cleveland AIW leader staff meeting.
Right, right.
I've interviewed Brayman and Campbell. We've got Jewel. We got your Washburn. We really have a lot of stuff.
Dominic, in fact, I'm just, you know, I've got all my AIW stuff in one corner along with the DVDs and the VHS tapes, which, you know, really should be put into something besides that VHS tapes. Those are of Gabe Jewel. And, you know, and so, plus I've got Irv Bratzlaw's biography of Gabe. And that's, you know, we've got some good stuff here, you know, plus my own memoirs, yeah.
Right. So, I'm really willing to spend some time this year over the next 12 months into the beginning of next year to figure out, and we could, you know, I'd propose it for this conference because if we had you come for the one, but there's, so the do you remember the conference in Milwaukee, the Organizational American Historians?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, so Diane came with me and we went to that.
And then you stopped in at our conference because it was the same.
Right, that's why I did both, because yeah. I wanted to support your conference, and also they had some, Lautrid has maybe a half dozen to whatever sessions at the OAH. And I like OAH because they mix public history with more traditional historians.
Sure.
Anyways, they have a conference a year from now in Pittsburgh. So there's several things, and they have a journal. I really think if we, you know, we write too much, but somebody reads it and says, well, I'd be interested in this third of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really would like to do that with you this year if we could work on it.
I'll do what, John? I just, so I make it clear.
Write something up that is a presentation at a conference, which then could be published somewhere, which is an article on the, you know, we can touch on all AIW history, but it has to have some catch or something. And often the readers that they send stuff out to say, well, I'm really interested in your corruption story. Or can you flesh out, can you do a little more on the AIW's involvement in the IUD and how unions attempted to work together? Or, you know.
Well, sure. Well, yeah, I mean, we can, well, I guess what I'm asking is, what would you propose a top? So, were you looking for a general history of the AIW, or were you looking for just focusing on one specific issue?
I think if we, it's a good question. I was thinking,
and we have to now. What I could, I don't know if you still have it. I'm sure I sent it to you at one time, but I did a PowerPoint,
right,
which I presented at the New York conference for Lodger, wasn't it? Yeah. And so I've got that. I could send you as just a, because that's kind of a quick summary of the whole thing.
What I have in hard copy is the untold story of the UAW-AFL, the Allied Industrial Workers, the untold story of the other auto workers union.
What, was that something I wrote?
I think they're things you wrote and I maybe added some, added some.
Now that's just about four pages or so, right?
Right.
Three or four pages?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that was the summary we wrote, I think, for one of those proposals. So,
and then I have this collection of Xeroxes of all kinds of things that I put together for our session on May 23rd in Cleveland. I mean, just that stuff, let alone all the interviews and the videos. You know, part of the problem is it isn't worth, you know, it's a whole book stuff. But what I'm trying to think of is if we pulled it together, highlighted a couple themes, and then went to a couple different conferences or publications, I think somebody would bite on some part of it.
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, somebody take it up as a doctoral dissertation and then a later book for instance, the University of Illinois series of books they do, you know.
I absolutely agree. I don't see that I'm ready to help. I got to a point of I decided I wanted to be a retiree too much. But
I mean, I don't think we're in the position at the point of either of our lives to seriously think of doing the book ourselves. My hope would be that we'd get, I mean, we've got some inroads. We put two doctoral history types, you know, on our board from UW-Madison. And one has just published a book on the Mexicans in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
He's a dynamite guy, and so is the young lady that we put on. I mean, she's not particularly young. She's got a 10-year-old kid. But but she looks young compared to all the rest of us.
I understand.
And so we have a real youth movement going on here in our society. And they've created a young workers' council at the Milwaukee Area Labor Council, and they're going to be participating in our conference. Our conference is on women and the labor movement, and we're looking both back at the, you know, at the early days, and we're bringing Annalise Orlick from Dartmouth, to be our opening speaker. And so it's, I think it's shaping up to be a really good conference. We've got a nice group of panelists of, you know, women and who tell of their experiences, you know, in breaking various gender lines, so to speak.
Good.
And so, anyway, I'm hoping we can find some budding historian who wants to look at the AIW.
You followed up at one time, I don't know, 4 years, I get lost in how many years back. 4 years ago, a few years back, somebody who did do a presentation at a conference about a little piece of AIW, like the corruption thing or something.
Yeah, I think it was a guy from Louisiana or something, if I remember correctly. Was it Anderson? I met him at the New York Lodge conference.
So did you end up with a copy of his paper?
I do not know.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I'm trying to think of, boy, oh boy.
Well,
I should have.
I still plan, Ken, so just don't throw the stuff away. I still plan to come to Milwaukee to see my daughter. And
well, John, let me ask you this. I'm in the process of either sending that stuff off to Pittsburgh or holding on to it for a little while longer.
Well.
And the only problem I've got, I mean, I can carry it to my next place because there's not that much.
How many boxes, so as librarians talk about this in terms of how many feet of stuff is it? 2 feet, 12 feet?
I think most of it'll fit in a storage box. You know,
24 feet?
File storage box. so one of those boxes I can...
Oh, can you hold on to it?
Yeah, and what I'd like to do is, and I'm having the State Historical Society wants my papers too.
Good.
And, but I'm going to exempt the AIW stuff from there.
Yeah. I mean, to be so cruelly frank, you could put a note on top of the box or within the box, which would say something. I've sort of done, you know, so I'm 67, but I've started talking to my kids about this is worthwhile, this is not, and I've got...
No, I would, you, that's what I plan on doing.
So you put a note in there that says, you know, to whom it may concern...
This should go to the steelworkers.
Exactly.
For their archives, you know.
And I don't mind at all if you say, you know, consult with Professor Ravatt at Michigan State and Steve and that kind of thing, because they worked with me on some parts of this, or these people from the Historical Society or the Labor History Society.
Yeah. Well, okay, I will hang on to that stuff, and I'll let John Lepley, who is the guy... In Pittsburgh, know that I've still got the material, but it's reserved for them when I'm all set to go.
If that's okay, I mean, I don't want to burden you, but I'd also, you know, if you know, 6 months from now, one of us just says enough's enough, that's fine. But I really would like to do something with you about this, because it's I always thought it was fascinating.
Tell you what, why don't you go ahead and think about how we want to make a presentation to the North American stuff. And any other ideas you got, you know the story.
Did you see their call for papers, by the way?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they had a couple things that, you know... Okay, I will do that. That's great.
I don't mind doing a paper. And like we did for the Michigan, Wisconsin right to work.
Yeah, no, people, I got great feedback on that. That was well appreciated.
Yeah, we had good attendance.
We had very good attendance, and they had real problems because there was some problem on the main McGregor Conference Center got used that Saturday, so they had to shift us to this other site.
And right.
People got lost, and we still had 30 or something, and we had that room jammed.
Yeah, right. There was no more room in that.
Yeah.
In that room, right? Yeah.
So.
Well, it was on. So yeah, well, go ahead and you know, think that out, John.
Yeah.
And
I will propose that you be on a panel, one on the Labor History Society, and or somebody else, and you and I doing something on AIW, and I'll ask for their advice on how that might be framed best.
Right, and if you want my help in drafting this.
Great.
You know,
oh, no, I'll send you something, Ken. I'll send you something.
I'll be really overwhelmed until about the second week of May because we have several things coming on here. And then after that,
sounds good, but I'm going to still give them those dates on April for us kind of
trying to pick up. That's fine, yeah.
And the themes of that one is I thought, just to think about it, we started talking about AIW negotiating, things like the IUD, but other things, but mostly about your career stuff. Maybe your reflections on the fight against right to work when you first came in, which would have been some of the southern states versus the fight against it in Wisconsin.
I mean, that's my personal stuff. That's not particular AIW.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
And that reminds me, at one point, you started talking to Ray about some of this. Whatever happened to that?
Ray McDonald?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Ray McDonald. You were kind of chatting with him in terms of his recollections about AIW and negotiating.
Oh, yeah, well, we haven't pursued that at all.
Okay.
And I'm still in contact with, you know, Ray. I talk to him about once every 6 months or so.
Well, at some point I might press you to say, could we figure out more about that? Because that would kind of answer the question about how was, in a more recent time, and it might be two paragraphs, but how was AIW different than UAW on some of these same issues?
Mm-hmm.
Pensions, mm-hmm. Health and safety, plant closings.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of thing. So is there other things you wanted to tell me before we quit?
Oh, I got some news for you otherwise, which I'll...
Oh, go for it.
Mind.
Please.
You know how hard you work to get a doctorate degree?
That's a misunderstanding. I never got one.
Oh, well...
No, I was one of the last university labor educators hired with just a master's.
Oh.
Who got tenure track, yeah.
Well, I'm getting a doctorate.
You are?
Well, it's an honorary doctorate.
Well, very
from
cool.
The University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Oh, wonderful.
That's your graduation this year.
This year?
In Humanities, I guess it's called.
And, that's nice.
Yeah.
Who proposed it?
Well, Steve Meyer and his wife, Margo, who, you know, Margo is very, very influential in that.
Okay.
In that university. And Michael Gordon, I don't know if you know Michael.
No, I don't know Michael.
He's emeritus there now. He did my oral history.
Neat.
He was a major mover in the oral history movement.
Okay.
And Ames McGinnis, who you don't know,
no.
he's a younger prof up there.
Okay.
Plus somebody else whose name escapes me right
That's
now.
That's okay. Nice.
But they made quite a point.
Great.
Which I couldn't believe, because usually these doctorates go to somebody of prominence, you know.
Yeah, or somebody's giving them a gazillion dollars.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and how this works.
I can't give them a pot to pee in, you know, so.
No, did you ever know anybody related to the University of Massachusetts Labor Studies Center?
Not that I know of.
Okay, it was called Labor Relations and Research Center, UMass. And a guy named
I was aware of it, yeah, but I didn't know anything.
A guy named Harvey Friedman was the director. And it was maybe 20 students. The labor movement helped create it as a master's program in labor studies.
Uh-huh.
And it mainly was kind of seeing itself as professional training for people who are going to go to work for unions.
Sure.
Or university labor education people. And that's where I went to grad school.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And Tom Jurevich.
Sure.
He's now the director. He was earlier. Anyways, a couple other people after Harvey left. Harvey probably came out of the clothing workers. Anyways, I went there while Diane and I lived in Western Massachusetts and were working at a VA hospital. And long story short, got the master's. And then we came back to Michigan, where Diane and I had met, and we both were undergrads at University of Michigan, which was a lot of similarity to Wisconsin. But
oh, sure.
Wisconsin and Michigan were the only two places that had grad student unions in the early 70s.
Yeah, they were very early on that.
And I got hired along with a couple other guys that later became friends of mine by a student group at UMass to, would UMass grad students be interested in unionizing? And so I ended up getting this master's in trying to unionize the grad student employees at UMass Amherst. And we failed at the time, but I was involved in the process and writing the State Employment Relations Commission said we were more students than employees. They eventually became a union, but so we came back to Michigan for Diane to go to grad school. I tried to get jobs with the UAW and service employees, long story I'll tell you another time. Anyways, High and Joyce Kornbluh hired me, and I worked for them for a year before MSU hired me as a labor educator, originally not tenure stream, but then moved to tenure stream and stayed for 36 years.
Yeah.
But at some point, MSU became like Wisconsin, that you'd only would hire somebody tenure stream if they were a PhD.
Okay, so that's.
But you know, I uniquely.
I get this doctorate the simple way. I didn't have to work for it.
You know? So, but during my career, especially the first decade or so, there were people who were jealous of me being a tenured faculty member, assistant, then associate, then full, who never even had tried to be a PhD. Against it, but that isn't what I had done.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting because back when I went to college, I'm going back to 47 to 51, not all of your professors had doctorates.
No.
I had a number of assistant professors and associate, I suppose, and I even think maybe full professors who had only masters.
Right.
And I was in the journalism school.
Okay.
And I remember, a lot of those older profs.
Right.
Had great experiences as newspaper men.
Right.
And then came into the teaching field. And they had the world of experience. One was a former editorial writer for the New York Times and columnist, that was a big name, And I think he had a master's, I'm not even sure he had that. But he was a very tough taskmaster for us budding journalists, So, yeah, that was a whole different era. I mean, to even get a bachelor's degree in 1951, I think there was only 20% of Americans that even got that far, if that. It was rare for me to go to college, among my peers, basically.
Just to finish on that.
Yeah.
Or two aspects of that. One is sometimes off tape, I'll tell you about my interactions with Lisa Fine, who I think had some problems about the fact of why did Rivette have a tenure stream job and no PhD attempted even, not even, there are people that attempt it, they're all but a degree, ABD.
Sure.
But I hadn't done that. I did for a while think about getting a JD and becoming an attorney.
Sure.
But I was busy doing these labor history stuff on Michigan.
It's just the fact that you do your daily work. I mean, I had no. We were almost immediately after we got married in 54. We had kids, and we had lots of them.
Well, you had a lot more than me. I only had two daughters.
Well, that's still enough. I mean, you had to go out and earn a living, and that.
Well, I had a great job.
It's more weren't that easy in those days, and I'm sure it's not easy now. And, so you just do what you do.
To finish my story, because I've told you this. So after I got started, so I worked for a year for the Corn Blues, had a great time. Then got hired by State on a tenure stream, and U of M wouldn't match it because I wasn't a PhD. Because they did try to get me to stay there. And I had great mentors, Bob Ripas, who's from Milwaukee and was a great Democratic Socialist.
And a little bit of an iconoclast, I guess.
Oh, he got himself in trouble many times.
And that's right. My kind of guy.
Oh, absolutely. Anyways, and then I had, my boss was Dale Brickner. Who was an editor for, his involvement was, if I remember right, he worked for IUE in its fight against UE. And so got deeply involved in the sort of socialist versus communism debate. And he also worked in St. Louis for, what was his name, Gibbons?
Harold Gibbons.
Yeah, so Dale worked for him. And then ended up being a labor educator. I think he got a master's in California, became a labor educator at Indiana University, and then was hired at MSU. When the MSU director went to the George Meany Labor Study Center.
That's right, I remember that now,
We had Jackie...
Who was that guy that went to...
Oh, I'm going to think of it in a second. Did. I knew him a little. We had three people from Michigan go there. Jackie Brophy was one.
Right.
Of course, she's incredibly famous in terms of her dad's life. The director of the Meany Center was the director of the MSU Center before then. And then there was a U of M guy. Anyways, so I had Brickner and Ripas as my mentors here, along with a couple other people. So it was a great ride, but it was always a little funny because I hadn't been somebody who had tried to get a PhD, and I had... In fact, I have a document which says when they interviewed me in 76 or 77, when I was working for U of M, that he was an activist. That's what Brickner, somebody wrote on the phrase instead of an academic, an activist. And there were three attempts at MSU to unionize the tenure faculty in a union. And I was involved in two of the three, and one of them I was the chair of the organizing committee. You know, that was my career. It was kind of checkered.
Well, so was mine. But anyway, well, listen, John, I think we're all set on our marching orders.
I think so. I got to send you some things, and you to me, and I really appreciate you holding in. I'm sorry I haven't been... more willing to just say, oh, let's write a book on this.
I don't have the time for it.
But I really think we could make some presentations at a couple conferences, have some fun, and get a nice published article which might excite some young people who would see, oh, this would be worthwhile doing a dissertation on, which could become a book.
That's really what I'm interested in, is that this not be lost. And I don't care how it happens, but it really needs to be looked at, I think. And,
good.
But we'll see where it goes.
Thank you so much.
All right, John, you take care.
You take care.
All right.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.